From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Canary. As the need for ventilators continues to grow around the world, manufacturers are ramping up production, and some industries are shifting to ventilator production themselves. But there are also out-of-the-box approaches being worked on. A team of researchers around the world have developed a basic ventilator design that can be built using parts from the hardware store. It's called the Open Source Ventilator Project. That means it's an open collaboration that anyone can contribute to, and anyone can use the designs for free once they're ready. The team is starting the process this week to get what's called emergency use authorization from the FDA for these ventilators to be used during the coronavirus pandemic. It's being led by University of Florida Professor of Anesthesiology, Dr. Samson Lampetang, who I caught up with yesterday by phone. Dr. Lampetang, welcome to Gulf Coast Life.
Thank you.
To engage with us and your fellow listeners about this conversation or any of our shows, find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter or at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So let's just start with first principles here, because we hear everyone talking about ventilators. What exactly does a ventilator do? Like, explain it like I'm a fifth grader.
Okay. So right now you are ventilating yourself. But you're doing it by pulling air into your lungs. You are not conscious of it, but that's what you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Each time you take a breath, your diaphragm inside your body is pulling down and sucking air into your lungs. When people have COVID situation, they cannot do that anymore. And obviously, if you can't bring air into your lungs, the outcome is not going to be good, which is why there's this concern about ventilators. So essentially, the person has lost the ability to pull air in, like you and me are doing it right now. So therefore, then, instead of pulling air, now we push air in, which is why you may also hear them describe as positive pressure ventilators, meaning we are pushing above atmosphere. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the positive part. We are above is positive, below is negative. So currently you are doing negative breathing because you create a negative pressure which is below atmosphere and the air rushes into your lungs. But the people who are affected by COVID-19 cannot do that anymore. So instead of the air being pulled by them, we are pushing the air into their lungs for oxygen to help them breathe. That's a ventilator.
So when it comes to ventilators that you would find in the hospital, are there different kinds? I don't necessarily mean like manufacturers, but, you know, different categories of what a ventilator means.
Yes. So like everything else, like cars, right? You have very expensive cars and very bare bones cars. So we are definitely in the bare bones. So we are not trying, when I say we, I mean the open source ventilator. We're not trying to replicate the full-feature ventilators that I think GM and Ford are going to try and build. So we are really saying we are an alternative to nothing.
Hmm.
And as long as it's safe and bare bones, the key word being safe, then it will do the job. And actually now we're trying to get FDA Emergency Use Authorization, which is called EUA. And the intent is that this design would be allowed by FDA only while the crisis is ongoing, the pandemic, and also only for use on pandemic patients, on COVID patients, not for other patients while the crisis is ongoing.
So describe this open source ventilator that you've designed, and in describing it also answer the question, is this something that you had thought up before COVID-19 or in response to COVID-19?
So first of all, it's not only me. I'm speaking for a whole
sure.
team of volunteers.
Sure,
that's
sure.
the open source concept. So we have really creative people in India, Ottawa, Ireland, helping us. So it's not a University of Florida effort.
Mm-hmm.
It is based at the University of Florida, but there are a lot of very creative people, including yesterday somebody from Wisconsin. So the idea, if you want, started maybe 30, 40 years ago.
Okay.
Because as a graduate student at the University of Florida, I would say I was probably at the right place at the right time. And I had two respiratory therapist colleagues, Michael Banner and Paul Blanche. And the three of us were lamenting the fact that there was not a good transport ventilator. Transport ventilator does the same thing, except it's supposed to be very minimal because you use it during transport from the house to the hospital or hospital to hospital. So we designed one, and we were lucky. A Swiss company actually licensed it from the University of Florida and built it, and it was used on patients. So therefore, when we saw that there was a predicted shortage, like massive shortage of ventilators, it was never an issue for me of whether I knew how to build one. And also, it was really never an issue for me to stay on the sidelines and say, I can build one, but I'm too busy to get involved. So I wanted to do something. And then what helped is a colleague of mine, Patrick Tai, said, hey, why don't you do an open source 3D printed ventilator? So when I looked further into it, I sort of kept the open source concept, but discarded the 3D printed, because it is a good approach. But when you need a million, I'm not sure we can build them fast enough with 3D print.
Sure.
So that's why we went, therefore, with PVC from Home Depot. The other thing that was influenced our design, we had insider information because, like I said, I did a ventilator a long time ago. So we still have contacts within the ventilator industry. And about 4 weeks ago, before other people knew about it outside the ventilator community, we heard that this country had bought 4,000 ventilators. Others were ordering even more. And essentially, all the parts to build a ventilator have been cleaned up. That you won't get, like, the supply chain for ventilators has been disrupted. So therefore, when we set out to build an open source, I knew I couldn't use the parts I used 30 years ago to build a transport ventilator.
Sure.
Because they would not...
Understood.
So then I said, where can I find the equivalent parts? And that became the challenge, not repeating the design I and my two respiratory therapist colleagues did 30 or 40 years ago, I can't remember. But how do we reproduce that design, but with parts that are outside the ventilator supply chain? And I think that was a good early decision, which is why, now a few countries, like yesterday we were on a phone call to a country in South America, and they wanted, in Central America, they wanted to find out how to build our ventilators, because they said they've been trying to order, but the ventilator manufacturers are filling orders for the bigger countries, the bigger orders first.
So describe then, just in simple terms, what are the parts? You've mentioned PVC. What other parts would be involved, and where, I guess things that you would be able to get at a hardware store?
Yeah, well, one of the key parts is what's called a solenoid valve. And when you sprinkle your lawn and you set your timer to say, starts watering the lawn at 6 in the morning or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially you have a timer which at 6 o'clock opens a valve, and then that valve lets water rush to the sprinkler heads in your lawn, and then the sprinkler heads pop out and start spraying water, right? But we're not talking of the sprinkler heads. That's not what we're using. We're using of the valve that's buried underground, under usually a green circular manhole. So these are the valves we are using instead of the traditional valves used in the ventilator industry. So right now we have one valve that's run for 750,000 cycles. We're doing endurance testing. We want the valve to cycle for 1 million, because 1 million cycles is roughly one patient on a ventilator for 3 weeks, 24/7 at 30 breaths per minute. You do the math, you'll see it's about 900,000 change, and we just made it 1 million to be safe and to make it a number easy to remember. So we are three quarters of the way to the endurance testing of that valve, Because that valve, if you think about it, it's really meant to open once a day or at most twice a day.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Right? So we're taking it way past its rated limit, and that's why we're testing it. And so far, it's still going at 750,000 cycles.
So what is the mechanism that's providing the pumping action?
It's not a pumping action, so you have high-pressure gas.
Okay, so it's not pumping, it's just you have gas coming in at a certain pressure, and then it turns on and off and lets it through.
It's exactly like a sprinkler system, right?
Okay,
you have high-pressure water.
You know, you've mentioned open source for people who don't know what that means. The plan, I guess, then would be to finalize these designs, get some sort of approval, and then put that out into the world where anybody anywhere can download it for free and use it, right?
Correct. And also anybody anywhere in the world can contribute to it.
In other words, if somebody comes up with an improvement, it gets filtered back into the basic design,
exactly.
And everybody else can add the improvement.
Right. And then we also are looking at what we call design localization. Because here in the United States, everybody sort of has most people have a sprinkler, which is why Home Depot carries it. But in Africa or poorer countries, I don't think people really bother to water their lawn because they have more pressing needs. So then the idea is beyond open source, it's also what's called in engineering terms an open architecture system. Open architecture means you can swap parts as long as the parts meet the specifications of the open architecture. If you are old enough to remember the IBM PC when it came out, the IBM PC was a prime example of an open architecture because you may remember after it came out, suddenly people were saying, hey, did you know this guy created a new video card which is better than the IBM PCs? And this guy created a new monitor that has more resolution than the IBM PC. Why were people able to do that? Because it was an open architecture standard. IBM made clear what you needed to do to make your own product work with the IBM PC.
And that's the plan with the open source ventilator project.
It's open source, but also open architecture. So it's two different concepts. One is everybody contributes and everybody helps themselves, but the other part is open architecture. You have to contribute according to that standard. Your part, your little bit of the whole won't fit in the big hole.
Understood.
Hole as in WHOL,
So what is the estimated cost going to be for these and if they get the approval? And, you know, and what is the approval deadline or timeline, rather, that you're looking at?
Tomorrow, we're hoping to submit what's called a pre-EUA, so the FDA can take a look at what we intend to submit.
That's the emergency use authorization.
Authorization,
right.
Pre-EUA. It's called pre, the keyword being pre.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Friday, in 4 days, we hope to submit the EUA itself after having gone through an iterative dialogue with FDA.
As a professor of anesthesiology, is this a project, like, would you have imagined yourself working on something like this during a time like this? I mean, I guess you came up with this idea decades ago, but, you know, what's it like to be working on something like this during a, you know, actual global pandemic?
Well, I think, the glass half full to look at this is we are now work from home by decree of the University of Florida. So I could be working from home and getting stressed out and, you know, looking at all the gloomy news reports. So I think myself and our team of volunteers and the people at University of Florida are blessed that we have something to keep us busy and keep our minds away from this and feel we are doing something to fight the virus rather than feel we are just there waiting and sitting ducks.
Well, Dr. Samson Lampetang is a professor of anesthesiology at University of Florida. Dr. Lampetang, thank you for your time and good luck with this work. We'll have to keep in touch.
Thank you so much.